This is Community Voices on 91.9 UIS. I'm co-host Randy Eccles. We have Ken Pascia. He is involved with the Springfield Community Broadcasters. If you haven't heard that before, what is that, Ken?
Springfield Community Broadcasters, a 501c3 Illinois Attorney General Registered Charitable Organization. This is a group of DJs who worked for WQNA, the old 88.3. When that station was sold, we did the work to become state and then federally registered with the intent of bringing WQNA back to the air. With that effort, Springfield Community Broadcasters is a board of people. There's six other people involved. We have our former program director, Jim Pemberton. We have other people like Mike Hayer, Lana Wildman, Tom Huber, Michael Goza, and then Rachel Schrader, who are all former DJs, and then myself. I'm the vice president of the board. We've done a lot of work to try and get WQNA back in a place where it's well-led, and then the effort is leading very close to yielding the final result of getting us back on the air. So Springfield Community Broadcasters is the brains behind WQNA.
It'll be the governing body over the station license.
Absolutely. In terms of process, programming, outcomes, it all goes to a board. I tend to be the public face. I do a lot of that as the media representative and vice president. All major decisions, some day-to-day, obviously, things need done. Anything major goes straight to the board. We deal with large conversations of working with seven people making decisions. It's been a great process, and it's been a lot of fun to work with people who have that same kind of vision, especially since it's taken years to get here.
A lot of people will be excited to hear Q&A is coming back. There are some folks, though, who don't know what Q&A was or what it's going to be. How long was Q&A around?
I want to say close to 40 years. It was a long time station out there at the Capital Area Career Center. With that, they started as a community low power FM that was largely staffed by the students out there in their media program. As time goes on and media has changed, there was less students and more community members running it. By the time it went off air in 2019, it was fully community staffed, largely DJs who play what they want to play. I had a hip hop show, the gentleman after me, the aging adult rocker, shout out to Dave. He used to do 50s, 60s, 70s. Kind of obscure, a little bit of the Casey Kasem approach where you'd get a great story with it. And that's the vibe of what WQNA offered, was a representation, a sort of slice of the people in our community, and a very eclectic music mix where you could tune in Tuesday at 5 is not going to be the same as Wednesday at 6. That was what made it so interesting. A lot of times, no knock on any station out there, but there's a lot more exact programming and a very limited sort of musical base. One of the big things Q&A used to have is people loved that. They're like, wow, I'd never heard that. Or where did they get that? That's really good.
It takes me back to the FM underground when it was first emerging in the mid-70s. You'd have these stations that just weren't playing anything you heard on commercial radio. It was what became album rock or classic rock eventually. But it was all new music then, mm-hmm. And it was real deep cuts. A lot of personality, a lot of context, sometimes too much personality. It just depends. Q&A, the format is, I've heard some people refer to as a checkerboard. Mm-hmm. It's not a consistent, all through the day, you're going to get that mix of music. At this time, you're going to get a blues show. At this time, you're going to get a metal show. How do you go about reprogramming and revitalizing a station like this?
We're pretty lucky. While it has been almost 7 years since Q&A went off air, the DJs and the people that were involved are still very interested. When they heard it was coming back, we've had a really great response from former DJs and then people that are interested in it. I've had people ask us why we would want to bring back something that a lot of people may not consider necessarily viable in such a big media landscape that's very app-driven. Most people's music is on Spotify or Apple. You get a chance to actually hear what I think is representative of a lot of people's musical taste. I don't think a lot of people listen to just one thing. That's something where a lot of times our stations are very narrow cast. They also don't carry a lot of the community behind them. NPR WUIS does a phenomenal job of that, but that is more of a rarer thing. A lot more now we see piped in, we see pre-programming, we see DJs who are not in studio. If you tried to call or reach out, like Q&A is going to have a call-in line. We're going to have a webcam for the DJs that do want to go live. We're going to create that connection with the community where we still think that's a viable place of not just the eclecticness of the music, but the eclecticness of the viewpoint and the perspectives that people in our community offer, because we're a very diverse kind of place, what I like to call a purple city.
If somebody wants to get involved, hears this and says, hey, that sounds exciting, how would they go about it?
So you have a few options. You can go to our website, wqnaradio.net. On there, there's various pages like our about page, our disclosure page. We have a shop on there with merchandise, but there's also a shows and talent page where at the very top, if you click on that, it'll say, would you like to take part? Do you want to join? Do you want to be a volunteer? You can reach us at our email. That'll be on that webpage, springfieldbroadcasters@gmail.com. There's a phone number on there you can reach out at. You can also show up at the studio here in the next couple weeks when we do start to be more open to the public once we get some things installed. We try and be very available. There's the Facebook page. There's our Instagram page for WQ&A, as well as Springfield Community Broadcasters. We're very responsive on there. We ask everyone who's interested, if you want to do a show, pick a concept, give us 3 times that you want to do it, because we can't guarantee an exact slot, but we will work with your schedule as best as possible. And then be prepared to learn the rules. We want to make sure you know what the FCC and WQ&A expects. We would love for people to join us. I think there's still a lot of room where, even in the world of podcasts, you're very much speaking to a very limited audience there. This is a citywide radio station. You can speak directly to your community and the people in it instantly.
If somebody wants the 2 a.m. slot on a Wednesday, that might be a possibility.
Oh, that's a dream. I love that. We had a guy who wants to do an overnight show. I actually had to tell him he had to cut back. At least leave room for someone else. No, people are excited about it. There's a lot of people who very much want to take part in the idea of something community-based. I think a lot of times, with all the access we have on these apps and things like that, you still become very fragmented and disconnected from commonality and sort of the voices of the people around you, rather than what the algorithm wants you to see and hear. This is a chance to really kind of interact and be a part of your own community and shape the narrative in a way.
Community broadcasts around the FM Underground have been really important. St. Louis had a great one, and they unfortunately had that fall apart because of some control issues and financial challenges. What's the status right now? You've been gone for 7 years. Suddenly you found a signal. What kind of signal did you find?
To be fair, and it's a little bit of a tale, but so when we started in 2019, people were really hungry for what we were doing. They missed Q&A immediately, filled a lot of community spaces. With that, when we formed Springfield Community Broadcasters, prior to COVID, we'd raised a pretty significant amount. Not wealthy, but good enough for community radio to get going. Then COVID hit. It delayed everyone for a couple years. We sat on our eggs, patiently waited. We had the fortune of having the inside track on a station that closed, so we were able to acquire quite a bit of equipment a few years ago, which we've kept well safe and stored. With that, we have looked at it like, I hate to use such a metaphor, but like Thanos's glove. You don't get them all at once. You got to go dig for the jewels. And that's where, as time has gone on, we have done the work to stay in position to succeed. We got our 501c3, we got our charitable organization status. We were going to be in the Elf Shelf over there on Adams. We were going to co-locate the tower there. And then that terrible tragedy happened with the fire. The unfortunate loss of so much great businesses on Adam Street. We felt that too. We haven't really made much rub about that because real businesses lost their space. We were just someone who had a dream that was close. We were grateful though with the Myers building, who's welcomed us in. We were able to find a space there.
Are you on the base level?
Yeah, we're going to have a street level accessible, public accessible studio. The goal, we're going to co-locate. We have the tower. We have our office space on one of the floors there, as well as the main studio, which will be publicly accessible. When the LPFM license window opened up in 2024, they hadn't opened up one in 10 years, and there was no indication that they ever would again. Everyone was a little bit surprised. We were ready to go. That was the whole thing. Over the years, I and others have done the work to maintain the ability to get there. This is a long road. We knew that it would not be quick and instant. A lot of times people are like, why is it taking so long? It's hard. It really is.
This is Community Voices on NPR Illinois 91.9 UIS. We're talking with Ken Pascia about WQ&A and Springfield Community Broadcasters, who are bringing it back probably sometime later this year.
You have to do a lot to be in position, and you have to be ready when the time comes. We had to have an engineer ready. We were able to get the CP, the construction permit from the FCC, because the Elf Shelf was still intact at that point. And when it unfortunately burnt down, we were able to move over to the Myers building, get new coordinates, and just send an update to the FCC. They're very easygoing about that. We'd already been approved through all the major steps. It was just a matter of moving over on the same block.
Was the tower going to be on top of the L shelf, and it's now going to be on top of the Myers building?
Mm-hmm.
How far will the signal go from downtown?
Max is about 100 watts in terms of distance, which you can actually, just as a note for anyone that really wants to see it, you can go to the WQ&A webpage, wqnaradio.net. On the access page in the menu, there is an actual, on the disclosure page, a map. It says FCC data. That's also available on fccdata.org. You just type in WQ&A LPFM. The range on that, if you picture Springfield, it would be a circle of Springfield almost all the way out to Sherman, Chatham, people in Rochester may get a little bit of a static, but we'll reach that far to where it will be citywide encompassing.
Springfield will get covered.
That's the major benefit of being on top of the Myers Building is if we'd stayed on the Elf Shelf, we would have had to get an extender on the Myers Building because it would have blocked that whole range. I don't want to say it worked out on our end in a good way that that happened, but in terms of the outcome for our station, it did actually aid us in finding a better position.
Radio licenses, radio signals are limited. There are only so many can be had on a particular dial in a particular community, so to find one is a lot. Congratulations there. It's going to be a real nice service to have the community be able to interact with music again. It helps to build the music scene here in town, which there is one, but there's not a lot of broadcast of the music that's happening here in town, and it's tough for them to elevate through the algorithm of the music streams these days. So this really helps build the music scene.
It also helps with the community conversation. One of our big goals is not only to, part of the charitable organization mission that we have is educational. We want to be involved intrinsically within the community, whether it's at Y Block concerts, parades, business openings, showcasing local owners, showcasing local entrepreneurs and creators, having discussions about the things that are happening in our town in a way that's meaningful, not just sound bites or slanted viewpoints, because as an LPFM, we're not allowed to politically advocate, but we can absolutely discuss community issues and have a conversation that's meaningful in a way that isn't slanted. It's intended to be a fair medium. And with the charitable organization, and we're going to do things like with the publicly accessible space on Washington there will be the studio space. And then there's the open space that we're going to offer space for like other not-for-profits to hold meetings, classes. We will hold our own classes, how to form a 501c3, how to start a business, how to create an LLC, how to get involved in your community, volunteer work, creating channels between these organizations that we see in town that do so much great work, but maybe don't have the channel available to communicate. Same with the underwriting and the ability to offer space to their information. That's something where a lot of times commercial stations have their own mission, and that's fair, but our goal is to try and create a community network that actually provides information and a slice of the people within that space in a meaningful way, not in a way that's profit-driven or with a goal of trying to extract.
Some of this takes money. All of it takes labor or time. It's a volunteer operation mostly. Where do you find the money?
A lot of it's community sustained. We've had a couple donors that have been very generous with us. And then with our efforts throughout the years, we've maintained significant donations in terms of what you would consider for a local community station. We've been very good about our money. Things are progressing. We're to the most expensive part. That's why we're getting ready to hold a fundraiser. And we're going to hold a few over the next few months. That's something where we want to make sure that people know that we're here, know that we're this close. Within the next couple months, we will be on air 100%. So the effort has really paid off and the patience that we've had with it. That's something where with raising money, that's absolutely where we want to make ourselves viable to the community in the sense that we don't want to just ask for money and there's nothing there. We want it to be something where people actually know what they're contributing to and see the outcomes of that, where they're like, you know, Q&A was here, Q&A was there. They helped with this. They're a part of that. That's where you have to show the community that you're serious. A lot of times people tend to talk a good game and then not quite deliver. We've tried to use every penny we have in terms of acquiring equipment, utilizing it and turning it back into something that's going to benefit the station, like our website. It is a great place to go in terms of information, access, merchandise, donation links, disclosures. The better you establish yourself before you get started, you have a much better opportunity to show people that you've taken the time and care to make this a successful endeavor. That's where once people become more aware of it, almost everyone that once they find out about it, I hear a little donation ding on my phone because they're excited too. Having something that's a community resource in a day and age where almost everything is conglomerated and corporate owned and overseen by somebody who doesn't even live here, we're offering a real community connection that can really create a space for everybody.
The old logo has been updated with some really nice art. You're pretty close to starting. So what is the actual air date? Do you have that set yet? Are you still building?
That's where you get into timelines. A lot of it has been something where people are like, well, I thought you're going to be on air by March because that's what our original launch date was planned to be. A lot of it is that you got to think of it as like puzzle pieces or like Thanos' glove. I can get us a studio space. I got us a CP license where all these things, 501c3, we've done all the work to get there. But when you get into a studio engineer versus a tower engineer and the difference there, what one can do without the other and why you need both of them to meet up, that's a longer end. But just think of it as like, if my guy hooks something up to the tower, he has to have something to hook it to. But for the studio engineer to create a space for him to have something to hook it to, we have to not only acquire all the equipment, but create the outlay, set up the space, get the electrician in there. There's a lot of things that have to progress, and it's been something where once we locked in the more concrete details, co-location of the tower is leased through a separate company. Rooftop space like that is not leased through the building owner. You're creating all these spaces where it's like, sure, we found this studio space and office space, but now I got to talk to this tower company and see if that's even viable for them.
They got to check if there's interference from other signals coming out and all that.
We locked in at the right time. When Wyndham closed, all those antennas tried to move, and they put up like a microwave tower on Myers from Wyndham, but there's no more space left on the radio tower. That's just something where we've been very lucky to kind of get those pieces in place. Within the next couple weeks, we'll have our studio engineer installing all the equipment, the boards, the shelving. The studio will come to space where that piece will be in the proper setting. The tower gentleman can get the antenna installed. We're going to have to get a city permit to shut down a street to get that raised up by a crane. And once those two are connected, we're going to put out a more public call for DJs. We're going to select a more concrete date. You don't want to lock yourself into a date because then you can be wrong. The old space has a air filter that's from the Epicurious and then Prairie Hemp, where if they wanted to sample, it pulls all the air outside. That has to be removed. And then we have to get a mason to brick back over that because it's a historic building space. Or getting a sign up. It's a historic building. So we don't just talk to the sign people. We got to go through the Historic Building Commission and get clearance for it. We're to the point where you can resubmit paperwork. If you don't do the things right with wiring and getting things, everything connected, it's going to be a bad day. Do the due diligence and take the time to get it right the first time. You have to show people nowadays that you're ready to go.
Anything else you want to make sure people know before we sign out?
I'd like everybody to know that WQ&A is the kind of radio station that I think everyone will be really excited about. And we'd really love if you keep an eye on the website as well as the Facebook page. We're going to have more fundraisers. We do updates about how the station's doing. We will be opening the studio soon to public access to kind of give people a chance to see us as we develop. That's just something where we really encourage people to get excited about the idea of what community radio can mean in a day and age where it feels like a lot of us are very disconnected on the community level. And I think that's something where creating a space for that and creating that platform is what everyone that's a part of WQ&A and Springfield Community Broadcasters has been working on for so long. So when people sort of view the outside effort, I hope everybody kind of sees that it's a dedicated team of people who really, really want to give this community something that it can rely on for years to come.
Ken's not a stranger to 91.9 in our studios here. You were telling us as you came in, you interned here a few years back.
Many moons ago, it feels like. I got my master's here in 2015 at UIS and my undergrad here as well in 2014. And I had the privilege of getting to be on air here at WUIS, as well as for the Reading Information Services, where you read for the visually impaired. It really gave me a great experience to where, while Q&A was a little more Wild West, NPR WUIS has a book that keeps track of the minutes. And that taught me a lot of great lessons about like how to run a great radio station and how to really listen to your audience. WUIS has been a big part of the community for a really long time. Like with the community voices that you guys are doing, it really provides a great lens into the community. And I would like to acknowledge that I draw inspiration from the public-driven mission that I experienced here at WUIS. It was a great experience. Radio still has a lot to offer, and I think you guys are a really solid example of that. It's where my career came from, is getting experience with radio, as well as shout out to Star 89.7. That's really one of the cool things, is that that's always been a viable place here in Springfield. I'm really excited to get a chance to be a part of that again.
We're happy to have had you part of our heritage. Wish you the very best as you give rebirth to WQ&A. Ken Pesha, thank you for joining us on Community Voices.
Thank you.